Good evening, everyone. Today we are beginning this first Sunday of Lent, as we usually do, by reading one of the gospel accounts of the temptation of Jesus in the desert. We have each year a different account where we hear of Christ beginning his public ministry, or the 40 days before his public ministry. And the story teaches us a number of things, one of them being a lesson about the nature and reality of temptation. The evil one tempts us, but ultimately attempts to lead us to make compromises. Compromises with our value system, compromises over what we believe. Rarely outright in our own lives does he tempt us to do something that is outright evil. When we look at the gospel today, he has a temptation for Jesus. Why don't you take these stones and make them to bread? He wants the Lord to betray his mission, but for a good intention, for a good purpose, something that seems innocuous. In the same way, we hear in the first reading of Adam and Eve, the temptation for Eve is not to do something which is outright evil, but to eat of the tree, disobey God's command, and thus become like gods by having this new knowledge. This is how the devil usually tempts us, how we normally encounter temptation. And it can happen on a personal level where we are tempted to compromise, to accept evil for the sake of something which is apparently good. But the reality is, I think, in our world today, where we see this more often is not so much on the personal level, but on the social, cultural, and political level. When it comes to voting, when it comes to public policy, where we are encouraged to make moral compromises for what appears to be a good intention, specifically for a spirit of compassion. Look at this certain subset of individuals. They're suffering in a certain way, so therefore we should allow this certain action or give them this certain right in order to alleviate their suffering. But the fact is, quite often this ends up being a false compassion. Why? Because we cannot permit a moral evil, even if it is for a great apparent good. The deeper issue, I think, is that it's so easy for us as a culture to get caught up in emotions about these issues instead of really thinking through the ramifications, thinking through the ethical dimensions and what it might mean for our culture and our society. Of course, there are numerous of these issues when it comes to life issues or issues dealing with marriage or even the end of life. But I want to focus on one today that, strangely, in 14 years as a priest, I've never had the opportunity to preach on. But certain things that are happening in our state lead me to talk about it. And that is the issue of gestational surrogacy. A big mouthful, gestational surrogacy. What is this? It's when we have a couple who cannot, for whatever reason, conceive. And what they choose to do is enter into a legal contract with the exchange of money with a third party, another woman, who agrees to be implanted with an embryo that's created in a Petri dish from the sperm or the egg or potentially two sperms, or there are all kinds of strange ways we can do it these days, in order to have the new embryo implanted in her womb where she will be the surrogate mother, having the child grow in her womb under the precondition that once she delivers the baby will belong to the original couple. This is what we call gestational surrogacy. The child will grow and gestate in her womb. Right now, this process is allowed in the state of Louisiana, but it is unregulated. And as a result, the legal and ethical complications make it very, very difficult for couples who want to engage in gestational surrogacy, this contract, difficult for them to enter into this contract. So as a result, they have to usually go to another state that has different rules and regulations. And so what's happening in our state is an attempt in the legislature to pass a law that will make rules and regulations to govern this. It was attempted to have passed last year, but Governor Jindal, our governor, vetoed it. And so they're attempting to pass it again. Tomorrow the legislative session begins, and it seems they're going to do their best to rush this through the House. And so I am encouraged, along with a number of other priests, to speak about this, because as a bill in the House and the Senate, it has great support. Why? Because it seems like a good thing. Here you have these infertile couples, these couples who cannot have children. And so it enables them to make it easier to have children through this process of gestational surrogacy. And it brings about rules that safeguards all the involved parties. But my challenge to you tonight, and I know I'm going to give you a lot to think about, and it's 9 o'clock at night, so it might be hard for our brain to work through this. But if we can see that there are some ethical implications that maybe we really haven't thought about. Granted, we want to help other people, but yet we could possibly see, I think I can make a strong enough argument, that what we're doing is exactly what went on in the gospel. This temptation put in front of us to make a moral compromise for the sake of a good intention to allow and to tolerate something which is morally and ethically untenable, to betray some of our deepest held moral convictions. And so what I want to do is spend a little time tonight trying to think through the moral and ethical dimensions of gestational surrogacy. The first is this: through this process, the child is being denied his or her right to be conceived in a natural way. The church believes that we all humans, have a right to be conceived through the exchange of love of a man and a woman, not in a lab or a petri dish. Now, of course, this brings up the deeper issues of in vitro fertilization, where we take the gametes of a man and a woman and bring them together in a petri dish, and then that embryo or those embryos are implanted into a womb. The church is against this, and to a great degree, we have not talked about it as much as we should over the course of the past 30 years, and it's become something that in the conscience of a lot of people, including Catholics, is acceptable. But at the heart, the problem is it tends to promote the idea that the child is an object to be possessed. Promotes the idea that the child, that human life, is the process of a technological innovation instead of a gift. And that's what we believe. The child is a gift given to the couple, which they are called to receive, not a product of a technological process. Number two, and this is an issue that a lot of people are not aware of, through the process of in vitro fertilization, there's not just one embryo that is created, but numerous embryos are created. Genetically, if we are aware of it, that each embryo is, even though it may be just a few cells, an individual member of the human species. It's nothing else but something which is human. And so what happens is, whenever these embryos are implanted into a womb, whether it be of the biological mother or of the surrogate mother, numerous are ones are implanted in hoping that at least one will take hold. But what happens to the ones that are not implanted? They are cryogenically preserved. They're frozen. And they sit in this freezer, basically, in the hopes that one day they might be implanted in the mother's womb again. But the fact of the matter, that often doesn't happen, because it is a very, very tedious, difficult, and expensive process. And so these tiny humans in the state of embryonic development are reduced to an absurd fate. What happens to them? What happens to them? The third thing, and this is a very serious issue, is that nobody chooses to be a surrogate mother for free. It costs and it takes money. And what ends up happening is we see a commodification of life and of pregnancy. Believe me, this is not a cheap process. It takes tens of thousands of dollars to be able to afford this. And what happens is that the couple will often go looking for a woman who wants to be a surrogate, and the ones who often want to be surrogates are in need of money. They can often be very poor or possibly college students. And what ends up happening is we open up, by making this legal and acceptable, something which allows the exploitation or the possible exploitation of women who are in need of money and will compromise themselves in order to enter into this contract. It's ultimately putting a price on the womb, putting a price on pregnancy and life. We've heard over the course of the past year, Pope Francis talked so much about the evils of consumerism. Isn't this a great example of how we are willing to put a price even on a woman's body and on her womb, just so that certain individuals can bring forth children? This is the height of the consumeristic mentality, where everything has a price. Number four, this, as I said earlier, alluded to, lead to the exploitation of women. These women being paid ultimately to rent their wombs, that were reduced to a womb rather than a person. I said, a lot of times poor women or women in need are being exploited for this. And their studies show, or reports, that what's happening is because the cost is so high in America, many of these couples are going to India, where the women are willing to do this at a much lower rate. They are being exploited by people who are willing to pay money. The most ironic thing about this is that the church is against this, but our strongest allies are the radical feminists. The radical feminists realize that this exploits women, and it's something that needs to be opposed. The next point, of course, should be, logically, the question of abortion. If you read the law, and it's available online, when the woman has the child in her womb, even though she is not the genetic mother, she still is considered the biological mother who has decision of what goes on with her womb. So what happens if that woman decides that she wants to have an abortion? She wants out of this contract. What happens then? And we've seen in other states similar situations. It causes serious problems, not only because of the path towards abortion, but also the different legal ramifications. Another thing to think about, the sixth thing to think about, is the impact it has, or we have, when we sever that relationship of a mother and a child. Even though this is not her genetic child, it still grows in her womb. There is still a biological, chemical, and psychological connection. There have been numerous studies that show the psychological connection and the emotional and physical connection that grows between a child and a mother when the child is in her womb. And so what happens when that child is given up, the child is taken away from that mother. And can you imagine the trouble it could potentially cause for the mom or also for the child later on down the line? If you really pay attention and read the law, there are mandatory provisions for the surrogate mother that she has to go through certain amounts of emotional and psychological counseling. If it was nothing, then why is this in the law? Because they understand it can cause severe emotional and psychological trauma to give up the child that you've buried in your womb for the past 9 months. And then also, what about the potential psychological effects of this child later on down the line? We need to be able to consider these things. And then seventh and finally, what does this all show as we continually move in this type of direction about the loss of those things that are essentially human to technology? You're not going to find a more essentially human relationship than that connection between a mother and a child. And to have technology and science enter into such a way to distort that relationship. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but for those of us here who are familiar with the Aldous Huxley's famous book, Brave New World, are we moving towards a state where one day children will not be born, but be decanted? are the possibility of having artificial wombs, where children can go through the normal process of gestation, not even in the womb of a woman. This is the triumph, and very, very disturbing, of what we call the ethic of technology, which states, if it can be done, it must be done. Very ironic, in the course of the past couple of weeks, there was a news report about an embryo that was brought into existence by using the gametes from three different individuals instead of two. This is the type of logic that precedes this. What are we doing to what it means to be human by allowing these types of things? So, summing it up, regardless of good intentions, the desire to help these infertile couples, we as a state cannot sanction such evil. We cannot sanction this type of thing. There are too many bad ethical ramifications of this. So I'm going to give you three concrete action items. Number one, please get the word out about this to your friends and family, particularly using social media. After Mass tonight, I'll upload the homily and I'll put up some links so that you can learn more about it. I bet there are a lot of people who don't know anything about this, that it's going on, or the deeper reflections that we've shared tonight. Help people know. Number two, please, this week, contact our state legislators and let them know how you feel about, I think it's House Bill 187. Share your thoughts with them in a very kind way, in a very loving and respectful way, but still let them know, as their constituent, how you feel about this. And finally, it's important for us as Americans and as Catholics to keep ourselves informed on these political, bioethical issues. This is where the future is heading. If we are ignorant about these things, then it's much easier for us to be manipulated or to consent to some pretty unethical and bizarre things in the future. The final point is this. We have great sympathy as a church and as individuals, and must show it, for those couples who struggle with infertility. Over my time as a priest, I've seen this is a tremendous cross for many couples. We must show the support for them, but there are other ethical avenues for treating infertility and for bringing forth life. Number two, we also must emphasize, and this is very important, the great value and dignity of children born through this process. These children are not abominations. They are created in the image and likeness of God. They have great value and great worth, and they must be cherished, nurtured, and protected. Ultimately, we are not judging anyone who is involved in this situation. We cannot condemn them. What we are speaking about here is the process. The process and the fact that passing this bill will ultimately not so much protect people, but promote more gestational surrogacy in the state of Louisiana. Going back to the gospel, we have got to take the principle that Jesus gives us. We do not dialogue with evil. We do not make compromises, even when it seems to be that it's going to be for a noble intention. We have to be discerning, think and pray through this, and stand on the side of life, stand on the side of truth, ultimately here, stand on the side of children and of women. Amen.